From the heart of rural France, this is the Keto Woman podcast, brought to you by me. Hello, keto lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. I've been keto now for over 2 years and it has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs under 20 grams a day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds and the incidental carbs you find in things like full fat dairy. Choose delicious fatty proteins and be free and easy with oily dressings on salad and butter on your veggies. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalized keto. You'll hear all sorts of ways to keto from my guests. There is no one way to do keto, no one size fits all. I hope to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we really can't give you medical advice. It's always best to consult your own doctor when making big changes to your diet and lifestyle, because they know you and your medical history, and so have access to the bigger picture. Wouldn't it be helpful to have one place where you could find all the links? Want to sign up to my new Patreon-exclusive Facebook group, Daisy's Lovelies? No problem. How about subscribing to my YouTube channel? Please help me notch up my first 1,000 subscribers by going to links.ketowomanpodcast.com and following the YouTube link. Not following me on Instagram yet? Hit the Instagram button. You get the idea. All the buttons, all the links you need are at links.ketowomanpodcast.com. Welcome to episode number 169, where I am joined by extraordinary man Dan Grief. Owner of Deliciously Guilt-Free, a keto bakery in the UK, Dan wanted to have the same sweet treats but without the massive sugar and insulin spikes, and so makes brownies, blondies, and cakes that are less than a few grams of carbs each. He has just been listed by Yahoo Finance as one of their top 10 foodpreneurs. Dan also has an interest in politics, standing for Parliament 3 times, and has a goal to help build the low-carb community as a grassroots movement for change. Dan's one of those people it's impossible not to warm to and like. I have what I think is an increasingly common distrust for politicians, but Dan is absolutely the kind of man I'd like to have as my local MP. You can really tell just how much he cares. He's one of those genuinely good guys. Oh, and he also makes great cakes. But more about those next week. This is a two-parter, and I've also messed up the timeline by scheduling it in the new year. As you will hear, I originally planned to put it out before Christmas. No matter. I hope you enjoy getting to know Dan as much as I did. Welcome, Dan, to the Keto Woman podcast. How are you doing today?
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you, Daisy. And I know you often say, you know, it's a podcast with women guests and the odd man. I suppose I am that odd man today. So thank you for having me on.
You are one of the odd men indeed. Bit of a run of odd men. You're following on from podcast favourite Richard Morris. So,
well, no pressure. No pressure at all. I mean, an absolute legend in podcasting and in low carb and keto. And so, yeah, I'm going to have to try and fill a massive gap there, but I'll see what I can do.
Funnily enough, that's what led me to contact you the other day. It was listening to them on your podcast.
Well, that was a real privilege.
It sounds like you had fun.
Yeah, we did. And actually, I think you were mentioned in that podcast, weren't you?
I was, yes.
Yeah, I'd actually heard your podcast with them on, and And of course, you know, I remember the introduction with Carl. I think it is doing the introduction before. And I was like, this is exciting. And yeah, you know what? This is the interesting thing. Like this time last year, I didn't have a podcast. And if someone said to me, you're going to have a conversation with, well, as it is now, three keto dudes, I'd have kind of been so like, you know, surprised and said, you're talking rubbish. That's not going to happen ever. But then you have a podcast, you ask them to come on, they say yes, and you think, what the hell do I do now? So, you know, it's a real privilege to have them come on. I was really, really, like, I was actually nervous as hell beforehand. Absolutely loved it. Really did enjoy the experience. And they're just so professional. They know what they're doing. They just fill in and they just talk so naturally. And considering they didn't know me at all, they were just, I felt like we were friends at the end of it. They're absolutely superb to talk to. And Richard in particular, what a vast amount of knowledge that man has. I could listen to him all day long easily, and at the end still bug him to want to hear more because he knows so much. It's incredible how much those guys picked up and what they know about low carb and keto.
He does, and I like the way he explains things. I was talking to him and I said I really liked the analogy you used about on the podcast episode that comes before yours. We talk a bit about COVID-19 and the vaccine, and he uses a wanted poster analogy. And I said, well, I always like his analogies, but I said that, you know, that one was great. It really helps you understand. And he said, yeah, coming up with good analogies is his superpower. And I think it really is. He can take things that are so complicated and just regurgitate them in a nice, easy to understand language for the rest of us.
Completely agree with you there. The analogy is one of those most essential ways of trying to understand or get across ideas. And when I used to be a teacher, the thing I realized was you're sometimes trying to take really complex ideas and topics and make them accessible in a way that somebody can relate to them. And then it makes sense very quickly. You go, oh, in that context, it does mean X, Y, Z. I see it now. But even though it sounds simple, it's really hard to do. And I take my hat off to him because it's not something I ever found easy to do. And I think you're right. He does make things very, very easy to understand the way he says things. And that is a talent in its own right, isn't it? He's obviously a natural teacher, I'd say.
That's right. And he's just generally a nice guy. I mean, you might have heard the story of him turning up on my doorstep in the middle of France to surprise me, which was actually a massive undertaking. You know, that's the kind of thing he does. He's a great friend.
And as soon as the pandemic is over, I'm sure you can see each other again one day face to face. It's just a matter of time, isn't it?
That's right. It's been very strange not seeing people. I'd got kind of used to going to the odd low carb conference and helping out with Keto Fest and things like that. And coming over to the PHC, of course. I've been to a couple of PHC conferences and really enjoyed those. And obviously not getting to see my family in the UK. It's been a funny old year, but been the same for everybody.
But you know what? We'll look back on this and it'll be storytelling of the future, won't it?
Exactly.
You know, what happened during the pandemic? Oh, I remember what it was like back then. You don't know you've had it. You know, you don't know you're born your kids today. Back in our day, well, bloomin' heck. You know, I'm sure those stories will be, we're going to dine out on those for years to come yet, Daisy. So don't worry.
Absolutely.
There'll be a lot of storytelling. And like you said, we're all in the same boat, I think, which, you know, is obviously not nice, but at least you feel like, yeah, this is a tough time for all of us, but we're going to get through it. And I hope that into the new year and the vaccine or whatever happens in regards to the virus itself, hopefully we're going to see the end of all this and we can go back to some sort of normality again.
Feels like there's a light at the end of the tunnel now, doesn't it?
Fingers crossed. You just never know. Although I just want to say, and I know this isn't about politics, but we're actually recording this over some very key days in terms of Brexit as well. And I think that is also terrifying me right now because, you know, obviously you're in the European Union, I'm not, which is a weird concept for me because I very much feel like I'm European still. But we just don't know what's going to happen. It's such an uncertain time. A pandemic and Brexit. I mean, it's a weird time to live through, isn't it?
Absolutely. Not for much longer. I'm coming back to the UK. So that was...
Oh, are you? Well, when's that?
Early next year.
Oh, okay.
Right in the middle of it.
Good luck with the border. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Oh, don't. It's... Yeah, it's a sore point, isn't it, Brexit?
But you know, it's Brexit sort of thing you just don't bring up at
COVID,
dinner, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Brexit plus COVID when you're trying to sell a property and then buy a property. So the place I'm buying in the UK, which is much smaller than what I live in here. I'm moving from a house to a flat. Well, actually, a maisonette.
Right.
Have fun describing what a maisonette is to Americans. I think they call them duplex.
You're right.
It's basically a two-story flat, which is an apartment. I love the wordplay. I go backwards and forwards with US and UK words all the time. But yes, when I move in, that will be the first time I've seen it face to face, as it were. I've seen videos of it. My sister went to view it. Yes. So yes, it's a little bit scary having purchased a property that I won't get to see until I walk through the door.
I'll be your sister for a moment and you be you, and you turn up and it turns out the house is actually a different scale than you're realizing. It's far, far smaller. There's a sewage works next door and like, I don't know, some sort of really loud place like a factory on the other side. Let's role play that discussion. How's that going to go when you have that conversation? Hi, Daisy. Welcome back to the UK. So good to have you here. What do you think about your new maisonette?
Well, actually, I can answer all those questions straight away because, well, one, she's actually terrified about me getting there and not liking it. So I've already assured her
that's
that
good. She
even
takes
if I
then.
Do get there and don't like it, I will not blame her.
Yeah.
But she did an absolutely stellar job of taking videos. So she did multiple videos, all the walkthroughs. So I have actually seen it through the lens
of
a video.
That's good.
All the way around the property, including outside. And what she also did was do a FaceTime video and walked around the neighborhood as well. So I think she's covered all your bases.
She did get arrested. However, at least you've got a good understanding of the area now. Strange lady seen filming people in the street. Okay, good.
That's right. And also, of course, I trust her judgment and her gut feelings. So everything's going to be fine. But I'm still panicking a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's a big move, isn't it? And I think it's one of those things in your life that you only do a few times. So you want to do it as few times as possible, because it's not a very pleasant experience in some ways. But no, it's good. New chapter in your life, eh?
Absolutely.
Very different experience. And also, what about, it must be quite strange moving away from a place where you're so far away from where you used to live. So you're completely new community, I suppose, and, you know, make new friends. I mean, it's quite a big deal, isn't it?
Yes, it's kind of, it's a community I'm a little bit familiar with, because growing up and my teenage years, I actually only lived about, well, varying distances away. But once I was in my late teens and driving, I was only about half an hour away from Hastings. So it's an area I know quite well, actually.
Oh, you're down south, right? Okay.
Yeah, I'm not starting completely afresh. And I've already made some contacts on Facebook. I've got some old friends and some family actually in the area. So no, it's not completely new. It's obviously it's new and exciting to explore, but I'm not completely unfamiliar with the area.
So you're going to be pretty close to France still then. You're kind of basically moving back to the piece of Britain that's almost next door to France. Well, it is next
that's
door to France,
right.
Really, isn't
I can
it?
Wave across the channel. I can't wait to live by the sea. That's something
I miss
so much.
Post-Brexit, you're not allowed to wave across the channel. That is being banned. So sorry about that. But you have to just do it over online instead. Okay, good.
But yes, in many ways, a lot of people have said to me, you know, why on earth are you moving back to Brexit Britain? But you know, the big reason for me is being closer to family. And so it's one of those things where you've got the scales and, you know, there are lots on either side, but the balance just tips for moving back to the UK, despite all those problems.
Well, people are everything, I think.
Absolutely.
And community in particular, whether that's family, friends, or whatever communities you have, I think that's one of the biggest things in life for me personally. And yeah, if you look back through life, I'm sure some of my biggest decisions have been based on other people and, you know, relationships with them and all those things. And that's what life's about, I think, personally.
That's right. And dogs.
Okay, you've
when
got dogs.
When it comes to me, dogs are of paramount importance. But anyway, enough talking about me. We're not here to talk about you. We're not here to talk about me. We are here to talk about you.
That was a Freudian slip, wasn't it? I see what happened there. Yeah, nice to talk about you. Oh, thanks very much.
So, Dan, tell me about you.
Okay, my name is Dan. Hi. Born and bred in Norfolk in East Anglia. which is just the right-hand side of the country. I mean, when you travel abroad, people basically say, you know, are you from London? No. Are you from Manchester? No. Where are you from then? Like, there's nowhere else in the whole of the UK that's left. Edinburgh? No, I'm not from Edinburgh either. But Norfolk is kind of, for those people outside of the UK, it's kind of like the eastern side, the bit that sort of sticks out in that big
lumpy
bump.
Bit, yeah.
The lumpy bit. Yeah, exactly. We have to be described in that way before.
You don't have the accent, though.
No, I suppose I do sometimes if I just put it on. What's going on? But I mean, my mum's from Northern Ireland and I was raised in a very multinational kind of school, really, because it was a state school, but it was a Catholic state school. And we had people from all over the world going to it. So, you know, the Catholic community in Norfolk's not very large, so it's quite a mixed school, I guess. And we all just have generally a British accent, I suppose. Mm. But there's a lot of people like us these days, aren't there? You know, we just kind of... You probably get more influenced by TV.
That's right.
Than you probably do by, you know, your community. So that's kind of, not I'm saying I was raised by TV. Okay, I'm getting in trouble with my parents already if they listen to this. But, you know, I think those influences are quite big, really. And then in terms of food and stuff. So, yeah, I kind of grew up eating, I would have said at the time, a very healthy lifestyle. You know, in a healthy nutritional way. The only thing is, I guess, in hindsight, I realized I was getting more unhealthy and even in my early 20s, was putting on weight and thinking, well, this isn't right because I'm eating a healthy lifestyle. What's going on? Obviously, I must exercise more. And this is one thing I was going to raise with you, actually. Do you remember, you see, like, for instance, the Diet Doctor and other websites have got the chart where they show in America, for instance, obesity rates are going up and up and up and up and up. And if you sort of presented that and said, well, effectively, that's because there's a character problem inside humanity suddenly. Over 20 years or so, humans became lazier. Humans became feckless and they suddenly weren't concerned with their health and they were becoming less responsible. So they start putting weight on. At the same time, we've got a number of gyms opening and membership in gyms is going up and up and up and up. But that's obviously a little anomaly. Most of us are getting more and more lazy and it's our personal fault that these things are happening. And I suppose, you know, obviously that's a load of rubbish, but I would have probably have believed that before, thinking I'm clearly somebody who has a problem with their weight because of poor choices that I make, because I know what's good. I eat too much. I eat all the bad food, like I eat the fat and the meat and everything. So I'd make the wrong choices and it's my fault and I should do better and I should work harder and I should go out running. I should go out, you know, to the gym. And I wasn't getting healthier. Well, I would get healthier for a bit and then find it wouldn't last very long. And that's kind of, especially from my 20s onwards with, I suppose, you know, the drink starts at university and the snacking and the bad food starts. And I guess when you've got the weight, it's harder to lose, isn't it? Now, in a way, it's going to sound a bit crazy, this, but one of the best things to happen in a very bizarre way is my wife getting gestational diabetes. Because I honestly, well, I say I think, I know this to be true. If she hadn't have been given that diagnosis, then I would have been carrying on now into my 40s, which I turn 40 next year, into my 50s, etc. I'd have carried on with this lifestyle without even thinking anything about my food, really, and just thinking, well, this is who I am, and that's the end of that, really. Mm-hmm. But when she got gestational diabetes, that's where everything changed. And I really did it in solidarity with her. That was kind of my main focus originally for thinking, well, she's got to change her diet. It's not really fair for me to be eating rice or chips or something if she can't. So I think it's only fair that I eat the same stuff. And then as I learned more, suddenly realizing, oh, hang on a minute, there's a lesson here for me. And this is really important. That's how things really changed and my eyes were opened. And one thing I noticed from running my own podcast now is that hearing other people's stories, and I must admit, it's rather odd being the person talking about myself because I'm used to asking the questions, sitting back and then enjoying the experience.
Oh, it's weird.
Yeah, it's slightly weird.
Yes, I always find it very hard when the tables are turned.
You may have noticed I was interviewing you at the beginning because I'm like, you know, I'm just used to saying, so, why are you moving to the UK? Tell me about your life. What's your favourite colour? And I guess, you know, I kind of realised from listening to other people talking on the podcast that when they find out about low carb, when they find out when they go keto, they can't help but want to tell the whole world about it because you're so excited saying, oh my goodness, did you know that this is happening to me? And actually, my body works in this way and I can just give it the right fuel and suddenly I'm feeling healthier, more energetic. You know, I love the fact that I do most of my recordings, for instance, at nighttime because that's just the time that it works best for most of us working with busy lives. And we're all buzzing with energy up to about 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night sometimes, not feeling remotely tired like you would if you were, you know, had a big carby pasta dinner. And then, you know, those days you used to want to go to bed and that would be the end of your day. And I find that there's that kind of buzz around the keto community where we just want to share this with everyone and say, look, I've got this it's almost like a religion, but it's based in science. You know, I've got this science that I realize works for me. I've got to tell the world about it. And as soon as that switch happened for me, I've been kind of a bit of a zealot ever since.
So you mentioned before that you were eating what you considered healthy from what you were saying about the rice and things. I'm presuming that's sort of the quote unquote balanced diet that always has a big portion of carbohydrates in it. I mean, how would you describe your diet other than healthy? Obviously, you've got hindsight now to look back. What were the problem areas, or weren't there? I mean, there are quite a few people who follow, even with that sort of moderate diet, they're the kind of people who never snack and they don't really eat many sweets and things like that, but they still have problems with their weight and still develop insulin resistance. So I think it's interesting to, you know, to find out what kind of level you were at before, at that time when you were struggling with your weight and your health.
Yeah, so I think if I look at university, that's the first time in my life that I was cooking for myself. And I honestly thought that the things you'd be eating would be things like a jacket potato for lunch. Pasta, I thought, was really healthy because it's light and it's cheap, obviously. But I thought that was like probably a really healthy meal with a tomato sauce on top. I really loved cooking, so I'd cook this really rich tomato sauce, put loads of fat in it and feel really bad about that part, but top it up with pasta because somehow that'd be healthier. I mean, it's crazy thinking now.
Well, it's the kind of meal that's taught actually for students because, like you say, budget's really important.
Yeah.
Easy to prepare, you know, and allegedly sort of a fairly healthy and quite filling. So it's typical fat-free meals, isn't it? Exactly.
It's fat-free. So you get told it must be good because it's fat-free. And so I remember I used to have rice probably, you know, one day, pasta the next, back to rice the next day just to sort of mix it up a little bit, eating lots of carbohydrate. And okay, I could make out I wasn't eating junk food as well, but of course I was. And the hours of day, you know, you're eating, I really know now that my circadian rhythm is really important. Mm. And, you know, I get migraines, for instance, and I know that, for instance, a big trigger for me is changing my circadian rhythm. And I also think nutritionally, you know, when I was going out at late at night, whatever, and then eating at 3 a.m, that was bad, even if it was something which wasn't as bad as me, you know, for me if I had it at midday, for instance. So there was definitely that factor as well. And I piled on a lot of weight at university. Not that I mean, a lot of people did. That's a sad thing. A lot of us did. And it became quite normal to kind of have podgy students. Mm. I remember my image of, you know, I don't know if you, if your listeners will know this, I know you will, but do you remember The Young Ones in the 80s?
Yeah.
And I used to watch that, you know, when I was young, it was repeated. And I used to see it. And I used to think, yeah, they all look like really skinny sort of students or whatever. That'll probably be me when I'm at university. But it's quite the opposite. People really ballooned up. And, you know, and I just came to mind actually while I was saying that. We had a drinks vending machine in the halls of residence. And I don't know if there were any diet drinks in there, but certainly there were, you know, full sugar versions. And, you know, and that was just then the hallway. It's very common just to go along and, you know, go and get a can out of there, whatever. That's quite normal. We all had gym membership. We used to go to the gym. I used to do running at university and everything else, be quite active. But I was just kind of eating rubbish food, really. And then, you know, post-university, I guess you just fall back into the habit of, well, pasta, rice, it's an easy thing to go to. If you're a bit lazy as well and you can't think of what to do with it, at least you've got that staple you can eat. And then you think, well, just put some veg with it, bit of meat, and there you go. But clearly it was working badly for me, really badly for me. And really, it was when I had the change of thought where suddenly we watched a Sarah Hallberg video when my wife was pregnant with gestational diabetes.
Perfect.
And I met Sarah Hallberg a few years later and I thought, oh my God, like she actually changed my life, that person. That's very rare. You get a paradigm shift happen where you can put it down to one moment. And I clearly remember this, sitting in our living room, and my wife is a doctor. So she had done a bit of reading into this and she knew full well that if you have gestational diabetes, you have a higher chance of type 2 diabetes following within 10, 20 or however many years it might be. Now, her family is from the Middle East and they predominantly have type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes when they get a bit older. So she's aware that, you know, family relation-wise, she's looking at down the nose of type 2 diabetes anyway. And she said, I don't really want to go down the insulin route. I want to see what's going to be the healthiest option for her body so that she doesn't have to go for the insulin route. And she did right to the very end. At the end, of course, the diabetes is much harder to control. She had to have a little bit at the end, but up to that point, pretty much the last week or two, she was pretty much the whole way through low carb, which is just healthier. And she said, I want you to watch this video. And it's a Friday night, and I'd just come back from school because I was a teacher at the time, and I thought, seriously, we're watching this now? Oh, God, come on then. Let's watch it. What's she got for me now? So I watched it thinking, whatever. And I just was absolutely blown away. And especially when she talks about how you can do baking and other things which are not kind of, which don't taste like you're missing out on carbohydrate. And I suddenly thought, well, hang on a minute, there's an alternative here. We don't have to deny ourselves things we do like necessarily. But the food that we can eat is actually a real celebration. Mm. You know, you're telling me that I can eat steak with Stilton on it, which is my favorite food in the whole wide world. And not only is it okay to eat, it's actually good for me to eat. That's ridiculously good news. You know, you're telling me that I don't have to eat rice. Well, I don't even really like rice that much. You know, I thought you had to eat it. You don't have to. What's going to happen to my body? Am I going to die? And actually, it started off as a low carb thing. We just decided to cut our carbohydrates down. And I was really shocked when my wife told me she's going to eat more fat because it's better for her blood sugar. And I was like, okay, are you sure? This seems a bit weird to me. So double cream became a big thing in our family. Single cream became like, that's just milk, isn't it? You know, what's the point in that? Let's go for double cream. Let's get serious. And yeah, and suddenly I just suddenly realized there's a whole way of eating that I've enjoyed my whole life that I'm suddenly told is better for you. And I was like, well, that's it. Let's get out of here. Now, well, actually, one thing I didn't tell you. When I was at university, I went through a phase where my weight wasn't great. And my mum said to me, why don't you get these ready meals that are fat-free? They're supposed to be healthy. Mm. So I started buying them. Wow, what a disappointment that was.
Disgusting.
So I was starving hungry. It tasted like cardboard warmed up. And as you're eating it, you just think, this is not great nutrition. It's just processed rubbish. And I put more weight on. And I know why.
A friend of mine used to live on lean cuisines.
Right.
That was what she went back to time and time again when she wanted to lose weight. And she would just eat lean cuisines and they were so disgusting.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also, it just makes you more hungry and you actually start desiring food. So, you know, I remember the one time actually talking about starving myself. I was doing the cabbage soup diet. That's bad in many ways. As Tom Watson said in his book, you know, like he experienced similar things to what I did. My girlfriend at the time said, oh, this is what the models do. Why don't you try that? And I was like, well, I'm not a model, but who knows? So I did. And then I remember like after I think the second day of doing it, there I was back in my kitchen at the University Hall. She walked in. I had this big pile of chips and a burger. And I was like, I'm eating. And I thought, this is weird. Whereas yesterday, for instance, because I do keto now, yesterday I had, you know, like a bacon joint for lunchtime. I was so stuffed by the evening. I said to my wife, well, I'm not eating anything. I'm absolutely satiated. I don't want anything. And I've not eaten anything until now, 24 hours later, because I just don't have the desire to eat. Whereas when you're starving yourself in that way, or you're eating meals which are fat-free, you just get starving, hungry, and depressed. And then the emphasis becomes that it's your fault that you've got this weight problem, that you must be making the wrong choices, and that other people don't suffer and struggle like you do. That's because you've got some sort of character flaw. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that I think our narrative has been for far too long. And if you said to people, you know what, just make a tweak or a change and you'll actually enjoy it more, then suddenly they'd be like, oh, liberation. And that's the word I'd say for me is liberation.
You just get obsessed with food when you're restricting in that way, especially cutting out fat and, you know, cutting out the fun stuff. As far as I'm concerned, I've always struggled with low fat options. But when you're on these seriously, you know, calorie restricted diet, that's all you think about. You're always planning your next meals.
Yeah.
Which is just the absolute opposite to what you've just said. You know, you have something that's really delicious and then you just kind of forget about eating for a while. Which if someone had said to you back at that time when you were doing, you know, the horrible fat-free stuff, you know, you'd have laughed at them, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, I remember well from, you know, being a child, and this story is like, well, those little moments as a kid, I must be about 7 or 8, and it really stands out in my memory. We were having like lamb chops. It was a chop of some description. Or maybe it was a pork chop, really big, thick bit of fat around it. And I remember my mum saying, oh, you know, you've got to cut that bit off. And I was like, oh, okay. And so it'd all be sat on our plates, apart from my mum, who's vegetarian. But the rest of us would have this little piece of fat on the plate. And I was like, that's my favourite bit, that bit. That's so delicious. And basically, mine would be shorter than the rest of theirs because I'd have trimmed off a little bit each end until in the end, mine was about, you know, 10 centimetres or whatever long and theirs is like 20, you know. And it's like, what happened there then? And it's just because I just loved that part the most. And then the switch that happens when you suddenly go to keto and you think, right, I'm going to eat that bit in the meat and I don't want the potato. I don't want the rubber. You keep that bit. That's bland and boring as far as I'm concerned. And that feels wonderful to go through. But there is that funny moment. I don't know if you've come across this before, where people tell you they can't do keto because they can't eat that much fat. And I'll say to them, well, okay, when you say you can't eat that much fat, you're probably eating as much fat as your body needs. You probably don't need to eat anymore. And if you're eating three meals a day full of fat, then yeah, that probably is too much fat. You don't need as much. You might find you cut back on what you're taking in because it's so rich and it's so calorie dense and it's so nutritious when you're eating that steak or whatever it might be. You don't need anything more. Mm-hmm. So don't have three meals of like the Western diet, but now it's all fat fueled. Just cut back a little bit and have one meal or two meals a day. Why don't you fast and skip breakfast? And you find you're not eating too much fat anymore. You're probably eating the amount of calories your body needs.
That's right. It has a habit of balancing out, doesn't it? But that's certainly the perspective looking in. I know my brothers joked at me before saying that I'm drinking liquid butter and eating massive piles of steak and things. But, the reality is, he always talks about me eating all this meat, but the reality is I don't actually eat that much more. I just don't have the carby bit on the plate.
Yes, exactly.
So it's not actually a case of needing more often than not. It's not a case of that you need to replace that carbohydrate bit. Okay, maybe when you're transitioning and you're getting used to the hunger levels, you might need to. But usually it balances out where you could have those two plates and they'd look pretty well the same. You just removed the starchy carby stuff off one. And the keto person would be quite happy with that.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to give them an extra two burgers or something. They don't need it or want it.
Do you ever watch Gavin and Stacey?
I know about it, but weirdly, it's one of those series that has completely passed me by. One of these days, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to
catch
up on
all of it. When you're coming back
it.
Here, we'll have a film night, we'll get the popcorn. Well, no, we can't get the popcorn. What are we talking about? We'll get the pork scratchings and we'll sit down and have a film night. And there's this great scene where Pamela, one of the parents in the piece, she says she's going for a low-carb diet. And so she comes out with three steaks. She said, there's a steak for the steak. There's a steak there to replace the potatoes. And there's a steak there to replace the veg. And I'm like, three steaks? What are you talking about? And I kind of feel like exactly what you just said there. I will have a meal, which will be the same as everyone else, with a nice creamy sauce on top. And that's me done.
Mm.
They'll have the same meal, the same creamy sauce. They'll just add lots of vegetables, roots, vegetables, all the rest of it. And then they're feeling bloated.
Mm.
And I feel absolutely fine. This is a revelation I've had as well. When you eat keto and you're not overeating, I mean, obviously that's bad, whatever you're eating, overeating is bad. But if you're not overeating, you don't feel stuffed afterwards. You feel just absolutely fine. You feel like you could be energetic. You could do things. You don't have this need to sit down and digest it all. And I find that really liberating as well. So it's changed my life actually in so many ways. And like I say, it's not nice you had gestational diabetes. However, it was the moment where we suddenly realized we had to change. And I'm not going to say it's perfect. I'm not going to try and give you the perfect story and say that was it. We just changed. And then we were like super healthy from there on in. And she won Miss Universe and I won Mr. whatever the equivalent is, Mr. Universe, I guess. It wasn't like that necessarily. It was, there have been ups and downs. There have been times when, the carbs have creeped back in again. So for instance, my most successful time was just after that, where I left teaching. I teach for 10 years and I left to do a different job. And I was working with schools in the UK. The idea was I was going there from a social enterprise to recruit the children to go and work in Africa and Asia and South America. And then I spent some time working in Kenya. And it was just such a cool job to do. I absolutely loved it. Not such a good job when you've got a young family, and my wife just started a PhD at Cambridge at the time. So that was tricky. So I had to leave not long after starting. However, I was going to the gym regularly. We had a baby at home. So I was kind of doing a lot of night shift stuff and working this job during the day, going to the gym, eating keto. I was probably the healthiest I've been for a long, long time. And then went to Africa. And even though in the community they were really accommodating, you can't really, when you're in that environment with deprived communities, say, oh, well, actually, I don't eat that. And I did for a few days. But when you only get offered rice and nothing else, you can do fast for only so long until it seems rude. And you're like, oh, my goodness, this is getting all embarrassing now. So then I did have some rice. And this is what I always find. That one meal, and I can pinpoint the moment it happened, that was in October. And then I came back from Africa and the carbs were creeping back in again because it became the norm suddenly. And then in October becomes November. November's not that far from Christmas.
We That's like Christmas right. pudding.
So before you know it, it's February. And then you think, and then it's like, and I remember this thinking, oh, but you know, so-and-so's wedding's in March. So if it's February now, like I want to enjoy the wedding. So it's March. And then you think, this is ridiculous. I've had 6 to 8 months of eating carbs again because there's always a reason. And I find for me, I've got to be consistent and strict, otherwise it doesn't work. And carb creep for me is a serious thing. And this is what I've learned from the podcast. I honestly think there's an addictive quality in carbohydrate for me. If I had a potato, I don't think I'd fancy a potato tomorrow. But if I have white flour, there's a trigger that sets me off. And my brain's like, right, that's it. We're back on this, guys. Let's go for it. And I really crave it again. And so I've just had to realize... David Unwin says this really nicely. He said, what a valuable lesson to learn. And I love that. He says, as long as you know what your trigger is, that's the thing to avoid. So do your best to avoid that. And if you do have, you know, something happen that's just not optimal, just realize, well, that's an opportunity to learn. Don't make that mistake again if you can help it. And I think that's the way it's got to be. Don't beat yourself up. Just realize how you work and then think to yourself, right, what can I do strategically to try to avoid that situation again? And the African experience, I couldn't do much about that. But in life, generally in the Western world, we have a lot more control over our food than we think we do. We just let these things happen, or they happen to us, and then we kind of become victim to it.
And it's all about balance, isn't it? And you can create different rules for different foods. I've discovered anyway.
Oh, okay.
And it depends, doesn't it? What level of strictness you need in your diet? You know, there are people who, for health reasons or for craving reasons or whatever it is, they need to be strict carnivore and nothing else.
Yeah,
then there are all these different levels. I mean, you just mentioned the difference between potatoes and white flour. Well, I have a rule for potatoes, all potatoes really, I guess, but chips in particular. I love potatoes, you know, I just love them. I love them all. I will not allow them in the house. If I allow them in the house, if I bring a sack of potatoes, I'll be eating them with every meal.
Yeah.
But I can have them when I'm out in a restaurant, which isn't very often, and it won't set up that craving cascade. But then there are other foods that would.
Is that because there's a finite end to it? Is that why it is? Because you know you've got to go home, they're not in the house anymore. You can't, the willpower's not, you're not depending on willpower alone.
It's part of it, but then there are other foods or drinks that I've now come to accept that I can't even have one. So Coke Zero is really, I find really, really addictive.
Right.
And I've done it so many times now where I convince myself I can just have one. And that one, every time, without fail, turns into me just mainlining the stuff.
Wow.
So that's not something. So, you know, in theory, you could set up the same rule. Well, I'm just going to have a Coke Zero every now and then when I happen to be, you know, out at a restaurant with friends or something. And a lot of people would be able to do that. I can't, but I can do it with chips. So, you know, different foods, different rules. If you want to, you know, some people thrive, some people do better just knowing what they're doing and being really strict and sticking to that. And there are, you know, others who like to play around with things because they don't necessarily want to let certain foods go. So it's such an individual thing. That's what I really like about keto and low carb, that it's absolutely there to be tailored to suit you, not the other way around.
Completely agree. And it just made me think, though, you said about you can go out and you can have chips in a restaurant or whatever, and you're okay with that. I think the difference that I would realize is, I think you're right, but with me and the flour thing, if, and maybe it's the same you'd have with Coke Zero, if I had an environment where I had flour on a piece of chicken or something, I'd eat that thinking that's great. But then I'd be engineering that the next event would be somewhere where that thing would be there. And that's where it tells me I've got a problem because I'm actually making my decision based on food.
That's right.
Now, that is very close to addiction, I'd say, if not actually addiction, because that means that's my primary focus above meeting somebody, above whatever else I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So I just have to appreciate, for me, I have to get rid of that because, you know, as Jen Unwin says, willpower is fatiguing. And if you have an environment where that's there for you, it's just going to, you're going to give in eventually because you're only human. So Yeah, you're right. I have to be careful on that. I have to appreciate that I have to do something that's going to help me to not have to face temptation regularly and to say, I don't do that. And it's funny, actually, it is a mindset thing. So when I was in Africa, I remember thinking, I don't eat carbs. So I'd have the fish part of the meal. I'd have the chicken part of the meal. When it then became just vegetarian food with just rice and a bit of veg, I was like, oh my goodness, I can't live on veg alone for days. What do I do here? And then it just sort of creeped back in. And I've had a few times like that, a few like ups and downs. I must admit, though, I do find when it comes to dietary stuff, you do unfortunately get the keto police and other types of nutrition police. And I think it's sad. You know, I think we should support each other and realize what we're doing is quite radical. What we're doing is actually a real positive step. If you're somebody who's cutting out, you know, a teaspoon of sugar from your tea each day, that's progress. Mm. If you're somebody who's like, you know, just literally skipping, you know, having the carbs off the plate and not having them one meal, that's progress. And I think we should celebrate all of it. And realize that there's almost like this stoic perfection that I think some of us try to convey. And I think social media has made this even worse, that somehow I do this and this is my identity and I've got it all sorted and I'm all right. And actually, there's nothing wrong to be saying I'm actually feeling it's quite tough for me right now, or I've struggled a little bit. And for me, you know, Christmas is a bit of a trigger because I love Christmas pudding and I love all the things that are taste from my childhood. And I feel like I'm missing out not by having them. Although when I have them, I feel awful, so it's not worth it. Mm. But, you know,
mince
I think
pies
it's...
for me. That's the thing for Christmas is mince pies. And unfortunately, yeah, they're just... Some things are really easy to keto-fy and some things are nigh on impossible. And yeah, I think yeah. The mince pies, unfortunately, fall into the latter.
It's sultanas and currants and things, isn't it? It's the
And the
raisins.
Pastry you can kind of get, but not really. It's just...
I agree.
Yeah, there are some things. And see, that's why I've got the chips rule, because nobody can tell me you can come up with a keto alternative for chips. Well, you can come up with alternatives, but they don't taste like chips.
Yeah, alternatives, but not equivalents. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. It is about just managing and knowing yourself. It's what you said before. And I think these experiences are useful. You know, people can come in and say, really beat themselves up and say, oh, you know, I've fallen off the wagon and I still feel so bad about myself. Well, no, hold on a minute. What have you learned from this? Because there's always something to learn from it, isn't it? And something to take forward. And that's really useful. So actually, especially if you're the person, if you struggle with these things a bit, having these slip-ups every now and then, I'm not going to say you should, you know, set out to do it, but they can be really advantageous in the long run because you learn things from them and you learn new strategies and ways to manage it that make it easier for you in the future.
Exactly. And you know what? I think I just want to relate to that to some things I used to do when I was younger. So I was really, really pious as a child. I mean, to the point of, I mean, I was trained to be a priest at one point in my life, but I was so pious that when I was a teenager, I used to fast and it was horrible. And it was really horrible. But then I look back on it now and I think what I've learned about fasting in comparison to that, you know, I know so much more about how my body works, but I didn't know back then. So I would kind of eat a lot of fruit before the fast started, thinking that's healthy food. Eat loads and loads of oranges in particular, my favorite fruit. So I'd eat those, probably a banana or two as well. Then be miserable all day long, save my kind of dinner money and whatnot and give that to charity as part of my Lenten observance. And then finish the fast to kind of midnight with probably like a piece of bread or something. And then the next day try and do it again and feel terrible and just so miserable. And it's a real revelation for me. When you know how you work, you suddenly think, okay, I'm going to do a fast. I remember I did one with my podcast. So about 20 of us did it together and I went for 5 days. And I was like, by day three, by day four, I was like, this could go on forever. This is crazy. Like, day five, shall I end it today? Shall I end it tomorrow? You know, it's a weird feeling just knowing how you work suddenly is such a revelation. And appreciating, and it ties into my migraines a bit, I'm trying to work out now what are my triggers. And apart from my sleep patterns and circadian rhythm, I wouldn't be surprised if there's certain foods that set me off. And I've just got to be aware of that and realize how they work in my body. And I wish I'd known this stuff sooner, really. But when you do know it, that again, it's liberating to know how you function and how you work.
Migraines are tricky. And I think trying to figure out what your triggers are, I think it's because I get migraines too. And the tendency is to try and work out what the trigger is. So what caused this migraine that I've got at the moment, and trying to pinpoint it? And I don't think it works like that. Elena Gross talks about migraine buckets. I've read also about stacking triggers. And it's basically more of a compound thing. So yes, you have triggers, but they all stack up together. And they'll, yes, there's quite possibly going to be something that just tips you over the edge. But people will say, oh, the migraine was caused by that tiny bit of dark chocolate I had. And in a way it was, because that's what tipped you over the edge. But actually it was the other things that were stacking up first.
Yeah.
And what I've found is, if you can remove a large part of that stack, or if you can empty a lot of your bucket out. And for me, a big part of that was changing the way I ate. You then have all that room left that those triggers. So for example, smells were always really bad for me, for migraines, and they still are a bit, but I'm way less sensitive to them now. I could guarantee it almost if I walked past somebody who had perfume on or who'd been smoking or something, bam, migraine.
Wow.
But now I can do the same thing and I won't get one. You know, so you see what I mean?
That's it's
if your bucket
isn't it?
Is already really full and you've got these triggers that sort of take up less space, they'll just, you can overflow so easily. But you
it's
can
like a
really
drop in a reservoir and it just pushes
that's
it over
right.
the dam enough to make it the whole thing go.
That's right.
Wow, well that's interesting. I didn't know that. I'll look into that then in that case.
I mean, I don't know how you found the difference in your migraines before and after keto, but I've certainly seen a huge change.
Yeah, you know what? They've got worse. I'm kind of one of the examples.
That's a shame.
I don't think it's keto related. I think it's age related. So
right.
My mum has the same thing. My sister has got worse as she's got older as well.
Mm.
There's definitely a link between the summer and hot weather with me, because I notice, you know, now we're recording this in December and I very rarely get any sort of headache at all this time of year.
Mm.
I don't know if it's light, I don't know if it's the heat.
Air pressure, maybe.
My day job is in the kitchen. Air pressure, perhaps. Yeah, could be that as well. My mum says actually for her, air pressure is a major factor that she gets triggered by. So yeah, I don't know what it is exactly, but it has, I mean, I never had to go to a doctor until very, very recently about it, because, you know, I never had them. It's never a factor when I was younger. And as I get older, it seems to be more and more prevalent. And I don't want to go on drugs from the doctor to manage it if needs be. I do have some atriptan as a way to manage the pain when I get an attack. However, I don't want to be on drugs to try and manage it for the rest of my life. I just think that's, for me personally, that's not the best route. I think there will be other things I could do first to try and manage that better. And like you said, you know, reduce the stacking effect of that so that I don't feel the need to be on the drugs. Because this is what I pick up, and I'm not a medical person at all, but from talking to different medics on the podcast, there seems to be that a lot of drugs are just masking and covering up underlying symptoms rather than actually correcting them or putting them right. And I don't want to be somebody who's just, you know, masking the problems that are there because of whatever I'm doing lifestyle-wise or whatever else. So I want to get to the very bottom of all that first. And then if I get to the point where I think, oh, there's nothing else I can do, then the drugs are there as an option if I need to. But I'd rather not if I can put it off as long as possible.
Well, it's very wise as well, actually, because you also, especially when you become too reliant on them, you then get into rebound headaches, rebound migraines. And that was part of my problem. I was taking a huge quantity of sumatriptans, and that's the problem. That's the irony with a lot of these medications, is that they quite often end up causing the same problem you're taking them for in the first place.
Yeah.
So I had to pretty well stop. I almost never take them now because they were just compounding the problem and I was just getting more and more and more because of it. So I think that's a very wise approach, and they're the kind of medication I think that if you're keeping them and you're using them occasionally, then that's a good thing. But if they become a regular thing, then they can become a problem in and of themselves, which seems a bit silly considering that's what they're there for, but it's a thing.
And also, you know, you're talking about things that are natural. It's not natural to have, you know, high, powerful, strong drugs in our bloodstreams all the time.
That's
and our livers are working. And there's all these other factors, aren't there? So, I think you're completely right there. That is a factor for me. You know, it'd be interesting because one thing that frustrates me, you go to a GP about this, they say, you know, what are your triggers or whatever? And I'll say, well, not sleeping much. Well, get more sleep. Well, you know, my son's now two. My daughter's 5. So the last 2 years of, you know, running a business at home, and you know, I've had quite a bizarre timetable, but also having a newborn baby at home, you know, that's, well, it's easy for you to say, isn't it? You know, so am I going to be a misogynist and say, no, to my wife, that's it. You're going to do all the night calls and whatnot because that's just the way it is, and I'm going to sleep through because that's good for my health. Well, what about her health? You know, that's just not how it is sometimes, and life isn't that easy. But I guess you make the environment as conducive to health as you can, and that's kind of the way you try to play it with most things probably in life.
And that's where we leave you this week. Make sure to come back and join us next week to hear more from Dan, the rest of his story, and of course, his top tip. To get the resources and links from this show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com/episodes. Please share this podcast with as many people as possible by sharing one of my links or just taking a screenshot of an episode that you enjoyed. Reviews really help raise the profile of the podcast, which gets it in front of more people, but also helps me attract a wide variety of guests. So please take a minute to leave a review on whichever podcast app or platform you like to listen on. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support really does mean the world to me. Thank you. Are you enjoying this podcast? Help me make more episodes and videos by making a pledge at my Patreon page, patreon.com/ketowomen. Or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman Podcast website. Don't forget to join in the fun on the Keto Woman Podcast Instagram and Facebook pages, and Daisy_KetoWoman on Twitter. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you would like to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. This week's end quote is from Mark Cuban. Wherever there is change and wherever there is uncertainty, there is opportunity. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.